Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Hello, genies. It's Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com, the show where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. Fisher here, your radio root sleuth. And this week we have the story of the discovery of the wreck of a ship that changed the lives of everyone alive today. That'll be in just 2 minutes. And a postcard that finally found its family after being mailed in 1940. We have someone who's developed a website to help you pry those stories out of your seniors, and you're going to love it because of its simplicity and how well it works with seniors. That'll be in about 8 minutes. And a listener has one of the stranger stories of discovery in his family you'll have ever heard. It involves an old house, the wrong side of the family, and an oil rag containing a cryptic family record. It's weird and fun, and that's later in the show. And, of course, Tom Perry, our preservation authority from TMCPlace.com, will be here to answer your questions. We received a lot of comments on the 12-year-old genealogist we introduced you to last week, Hiram Veach. One listener wrote, "Hey, if Hiram's for hire, I'm in." I'm thinking his rates will have to go up. Maybe I'll become his agent. If you missed Hiram's visit on last week's show, catch the podcast through iHeartRadio or iTunes or ExtremeGenes.com. And by the way, the free Extreme Genes podcast app for iPhone and Android are now available in your phone store. So download yours today. Our Extreme Genes online poll for this week was, do you have a family Bible in your family? 56% of our respondents said, yes, they do. We have one in ours dating back to the 1870s. Those are great treasures, and hopefully if you have one, you're digitizing the handwritten information found in it and are posting it where others can find it. This week, a new question. Do you have a family name that has been passed down at least 5 straight generations? In my family, the name Scott has come down 4 straight so far. I may have to make some adjustments in my will to assure at least one of my kids keeps this Scott thing going. A lot of our guests on the show come from listeners who call our toll-free find line, 1-234-56-GENES. That's 1-234-56-GENES, G-E-N-E-S. If you have an amazing story from the trail you'd like to share, give us a holler, and you just might find yourself on the show. As you know, the last few weeks we've had some celebrities on board talking about their family stories, and we have another one this week. It's singer Mickey Dolenz. I caught up with Mickey a few weeks ago, and here's what he had to say.
Briefly, my dad was an actor and my mom, and so I was born and raised in a showbiz family, and I didn't know anything else. I thought everybody's father was an actor.
And so they got you started, obviously, at a very young age. What's your earliest recollection of performing?
It was prenatal work I did. It's coming out on ultrasound.
What about your grandparents? Now, where were they?
No, they were not in the business. My father's side of the family was in Italy, and my mom's side of the family was in Texas.
And so did they ever get to see some of the
stuff
you did?
Oh, sure. They saw the stuff eventually, but my dad and mom both came out to Hollywood to be movie stars.
And by the way, I did a little research on Mickey and learned that back in the 1960s, he came from a group of monkeys. Next week, actor Edward James Olmos shares his remarkable heritage. It is time for this week's Family Histoire News, and we start with a huge story. In a special report for USA Today, reporter Tracy Watson tells us that an underwater archaeological explorer believes they've located the wreck of Christopher Columbus's flagship, the Santa Maria, in shallow water off the coast of Haiti. Talk about a ship that changed the world. It sank on Christmas Day in 1492, only 3 months after Columbus's first arrival in the New World. When Barry Clifford and his crew first discovered the ship's remains back in 2003, they had reasons to eliminate the possibility that it was the Santa Maria. But a few weeks ago, Clifford and company returned to the wreck and are now convinced they've located the ship that carried Columbus to the Western Hemisphere. About 2 years after the initial discovery, Barry Clifford had been studying 15th century weaponry. He suddenly awakened one night as he realized that a tube photographed by his son back in 03 was actually a cannon of the type that Columbus likely had on the Santa Maria, a Lombard. Sadly, when the team returned to the wreck several weeks back, they found the Lombard had been looted along with several other items they had originally photographed.
An examination of Columbus's log entries noted that the wreck of his flagship was 1.5 leagues from the fortified encampment he had made after the ship was destroyed, the La Navidad. This wreck fits that distance exactly. It also settled in a sandy area near breaking waves, as Columbus also noted in his journal. Clifford says there's a lot more evidence that he's not quite ready to reveal. Experts around the world are buzzing about the site, and many are ready to lend their expertise in authenticating what is looking more and more like the remains of Columbus's one and only Santa Maria. Next, Alan Marion of Butte Falls, Oregon, has received a postcard that was intended for his great-grandmother, Florence Marion, 74 years ago. This is one of those strange events where no one can explain how the postcard could have been lost in the postal system since the administration of Franklin D. Roosevelt. The card was filled out in pencil by one of Florence's relatives. It reads, "Arrived in Portland at 8 o'clock, having a fine time. Be home sometime Saturday, Blanche." A post office employee named Sonny Bryant first came across the note last year and took 10 months to figure out if she could locate a living descendant of Florence Marion to deliver the card to. She turned to Rogue Valley Genealogy Society's Charlene Brown, and after some investigation, Charlene realized that another society member, Alan Marion, had once talked to her about his family in Butte Falls. Alan later confirmed the relationship and now has the remarkable heirloom safely in his hands. How cool is that? Read about both of these remarkable stories and see the pictures at extremejeans.com. And coming up next, he's a guy who may have figured out the best way to suck those stories out of the brains of the seniors in your family. Nick Baum talks about his creation of StoryWorth.com in 3 minutes on Extreme Genes, Family History Radio, and ExtremeGenes.com. And welcome back to Extreme Genes, Family History Radio, ExtremeGenes.com, America's one and only syndicated radio show on digging up your dead. It is Fisher here, the radio root sleuth, with Nick Baum from a company called StoryWorth.com. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hi, Fisher. I'm great. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
I'm glad to have you on. Yeah, San Francisco. What a great town to start a new company in.
Indeed. It's beautiful and sunny. I've got sea lions outside honking away, so I can't complain.
Not a bad place. Well, and the reason we're having Nick on is we like to find companies out there that kind of help us to preserve our history, however it is, whether it's in story form, video form, audio form. Nick kind of has options for several of these in a simplified way so that you can get your, especially your seniors in your family, to come through and share some of their stories from their past that they might be, shall we say, a little incapable or hesitant to give up. Tell us about your story, Nick, and how you started this thing.
Sure. I actually came to this from a very personal side. My dad is 83, going on 84, and he's had a really interesting life. He was born in Germany, moved to the U.S. when he was very young. He was in the Navy. He's been a lawyer. He's moved to France, married a Swedish woman, my mom. And so, of course, he's accumulated a lot of really great stories. And on my side, I actually just got married about a year ago. We're coming up on our first anniversary. So we're thinking about kids in the next couple of years. And so I think there's a good chance that my dad will get to meet his grandchildren. But what I started thinking was that would they really remember him? And what would they know of him? And I wanted to find a way to record his stories the way he would tell them, but his tone of voice with his details in a way that they could really know who he is as a person. And that's where StoryWorth came from.
And that's where it started. And then you took this concept into website form. Now, I remember once running into a book, little booklet of questions that people can ask. I mean, it's filled with them. And the idea is that the relative fills these things out and you wind up getting quite a story from them ultimately, because there are a lot of details a little at a time. It's not something they have to do all at once. It's not like that all-consuming question of tell us about your life. It's about the first toy. It's about your first memory. Who was president when you were born? All these specific little things. And over time, you get something out of that. That is, if the ancestor, if the relative is actually willing to fill out the book.
Right. You know, it's very funny that you bring that up, because I actually did get one of those books for my parents. And I think it's a great system. The issue I ran into is that you really only have one page per story. And then you have all the questions laid out there at once, and so it's still a bit daunting to get started. Mm-hmm. You have to get it right. And so the idea for StoryWorth was, well, let's take this project and break it down into the easiest possible step you could do. So here's how it works. Once a week, we email our customers a single question about their life. So we have a huge library of questions, things like, what were your friends like in high school? Or what's the most exciting place you've ever traveled? Or what's the biggest risk you've ever taken? And then, of course, our customers can also pick their own questions or their family members can suggest them. And what we do is once a week, we email out one of these questions to each customer. All they have to do is reply with a story. And they can either reply by email or they can reply by phone. We then save their story and share it to their family members. It's completely private. It's only the family that sees the stories. And if you do that for a year, you answer 50 questions, you start to build up this biography and get a really good story of a person's life.
So I'm assuming, Nick, you're talking about a lot of seniors, and even most seniors these days have email.
That's right. In fact, I've been very happily surprised that I have customers in their 90s, and sometimes they call me for customer support issues. You know, we start discussing how I can help them, and some point in the conversation it comes up to say, well, you know, I'm in my 90s, and I'm not very tech savvy. And my reaction is, that's incredible that here you are, and you're comfortably using email, and a lot of people have iPads now. And, you know, I think what I've noticed is, actually, computers are really complicated.
Oh, yeah.
And so
they were supposed to simplify our lives. It didn't work that way.
Exactly. And I think when you've grown up with computers, you take so many things for granted about how they work.
Sure.
And one of the things that we are really proud of at StoryWorth is that we really try to take a step back and think, how can we make this as simple as possible? So that even someone who is not very familiar with computers but has an email account and wants to give this a try can really easily figure it out. And I think we've done a good job at that, and it's really rewarding to see people who, you know, are in their 80s, 90s, and who are able to use the product and get a lot of joy out of it.
And yet, I know from looking at your site, you can also do audio. You haven't gotten a video function for it yet. How's the audio thing work?
Right. So the audio thing does still require an email account. The way it works is the person gets the email, and right in the email, there's a button that says reply by phone. And when you click that button, the system will actually call your phone. So you don't need a smartphone. You don't need an iPhone or an Android. You can just do it with even a landline. And it works just like your voicemail. The system calls the person up and says, hi, this is StoryWorth. Here's this week's question. Recorded after the beep. And then what we do on the other end is we save that recording and send that recording to the family. So you actually get the full voice story with the tone of voice, and that, of course, gives a lot of personality. So people like that a lot.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, are you going to go to video eventually?
I think it's possible. It's not something we've prioritized so far, because our whole premise is that people will only write these stories or record these stories if we really lower the bar and make it as easy as possible. And video is really great if you can get it. You know, the quality and the motion of video is really high, but it takes a lot of effort. You have to make up your hair. You have to clean up your apartment. You have to put on some nice clothes, get the lighting right. And so I think video is something we'd like to encourage people to do a little bit further down the line once they've already started recording some stories. And in the meantime, what we found is you just have to get people started.
Yeah.
And that's where doing this one question a week, everyone can write one email a week. And especially because we have these question prompts, it's not even starting from a blank slate. It's you have kind of a specific topic to deal with. And that makes it so approachable that I like to say that there's almost no excuse not to do it.
Yeah.
And once people get started, what's so wonderful is that they tell us that even a little innocuous question brings all these memories back and starts them flowing. So it might be a question about, I think I brought up earlier, what were your friends like in high school? Well, that can turn into the stories about what teachers were like, or high school crushes, or what it was like to go to prom, or first car, or anything like that. And it's really just like you start pulling on this one little thread, and then all the memories come out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what about people who don't use email? Have you ever had anybody say, do it with snail mail?
I have, actually. And
really?
I think it's something that we could do eventually. I know of at least one person who got for their grandmother an internet-connected printer. So this is a printer that you just you plug in to a network, and then you send an email to this printer, and it prints it out. And so what he does is he sends the StoryWorth email to this printer. It prints out the question, and his grandmother then writes in longhand the story on the back of the page and mails it to him. I know people are doing it.
That's fantastic, though, isn't it? I mean, and not only that.
It's so clever.
Not only is it low tech, but you're getting an actual handwritten letter. I mean, doesn't the handwriting itself tell you something about the person?
Absolutely. So I think that is something that we'll probably explore at some point. For now, I think we've been lucky to find that a growing number of seniors do have email accounts.
Sure.
That's getting larger and larger over time. I think probably the first thing we'll want to do is have a phone-only version. Because I think having a version where instead of the service calling you, you could call in once a week and record your story, then you could really use it without even an email account. And I think that's something we'll do in the next year for sure.
A nice simplification. Now, how long have you been around?
So we launched a year ago, so we're just coming up on our first year. And it's been a really exciting first year. As I said, it was a very personal project for me at the start, just something I built. Literally the first prototype was me sending questions by email to my dad and seeing how he responded to them. And
what was the best story, Nick, that you got out of your dad that you didn't know before?
Oh, well, he has this wonderful story of I guess this was when he was in law school, and he had a girlfriend who decided to throw a crayfish party at his parents' house. And so what they did was they found some place, and this was, of course, before the internet, but they mail ordered a barrel of crayfish. And so he is in the kitchen, and he is trying to pry this barrel open. And of course, the lid flies off, and the crayfish spill all over the floor. And the real twist here is his family had two little dachshunds, and the dachshunds just went berserk, running around the kitchen, hunting down these crayfish. And I don't know actually what they ended up serving for dinner, but I presume that the crayfish might have been replaced by hot dogs or something.
So the dachshunds basically ate the crayfish on the spot.
Or chased them under the couch, and it was just mayhem. I think the dachshunds had probably their best day ever.
Yeah.
With all that excitement. But, you know, I think that's one of those little things that wouldn't necessarily come up in regular conversation. And we try to pick questions that get at kind of small things. So another really fun question I think that works well is, have you ever pulled a prank or been a victim of one? And there you can often find kind of funny little stories that at some point there's been a prank and that gives you a great question.
I like that. Well, Nick Baum, I love it. StoryWorth.com is the place. I saw that you were written up in the New York Times. That's very fun.
Yeah, we were very lucky. They reached out to us and wrote a very nice article. So that was a very nice moment for us.
Well, great stuff. And good luck to you in this project.
Thanks so much, Fisher, and I hope your listeners enjoy it and sign up and email me with any questions.
All right, and how do they do that?
So you can reach me at nick@storyworth.com, and I reply to every single email, and I'm very responsive, and I love to hear from people. We try to keep the business very, very personal and hands-on.
Perfect. Thanks, Nick. And coming up in 5 minutes, a listener shares his incredible story about a 175-year-old oil rag fought over by family members because of the cryptic family information found on it. You'll hear all about it when we return on Extreme Genes, Family History Radio, and ExtremeGenes.com. And welcome back. Extreme Genes, Family History Radio, ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, the Radio Root Sleuth, with one of our guests, Kelly McFarlane, who today has a story about an oil rag that turned out to be something a lot more than that. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
Good. Now, we have people call all the time on our toll-free find line, which is 1-234-56 genes, to get stories like this. And it is absolutely amazing the things that happen. You found an oil rag that was in one of your relatives' homes from one side of the family, but it should have been on the other side. Let's clarify this thing.
Yeah, with the name McFarlane, our claim to fame, I guess, is a gentleman that came out of Scotland, John Menzies McFarlane. And his father was John McFarlane, who was a coachman for the Prince of Wales. And he married the chambermaid, Annabel Sinclair. And it's Annabella Sinclair's line that I was looking at carefully, and found that her parents had several children, And we knew several of the children, but there was one child that there was rumored that when the family apparently joined a church and moved to America, he didn't want anything of it. And there was rumors that he instead went to Australia or he went to another place in America. But nobody knew if this Peter Sinclair was really a brother or not.
Huh.
So my mother was a Snow, a Nelson from the Snow family, and her sister purchased a home in Cedar City, Utah. And while she was cleaning it out, it was an old, old home. And it turns out that it was a home that Annabelle Sinclair, who then married John McFarlane, had lived in.
And wait a minute. So you're saying that on your mother's side, that there was this house, but the relic was from your father's side?
That's right.
Oh, that's bizarre.
Which drove my family crazy because she was searching for this in the attic and found an old rag, and she opened it up, and it was a sampler.
So the old stitchings, right?
Stitching, usually done by the younger schoolgirls to practice their cross stitch, and they are very well known to depict usually initials of the family members and dates, and sometimes they'll have a famous building cross stitched into it from that town where they're from, a castle in this case. And this stitching was being used as an oil rag. And so my aunt on my mom's side cleaned it up, framed it, and we found out that it was the sister of Annabelle Sinclair in 1838 did this. Her name was Catherine Sinclair. She never married, so she obviously passed this to her sister. And somebody didn't understand the value, probably one of the men of the family.
Right, right.
Used it for a tractor or something. And lo and behold, she's listed all the initials of her siblings. And right there amongst Catherine Sinclair and Jane Sinclair and John Sinclair and all the children we knew about is the initials P.S., for Peter Sinclair.
And you weren't sure previously if he was part of this family grouping?
Did not know for sure.
But this is obviously a very strong hint in that direction.
Yes, there was one letter that someone found that Annabelle's mother asked one of her children to write and ask about the whereabouts of Peter Sinclair. We have that letter, so we're pretty sure that he was a child that her mother was concerned about, and they never did know where he was. But this just really confirmed it. And it also cleared up that a lot of people have been spelling Catherine Sinclair with a K.
Hmm.
And so I published it on one of the websites and said they had it both ways and said they didn't know. And I said, well, assuming that Catherine knows how to spell her own name, we can rest assured that it's with a C.
With a C, because she did the stitch.
She did the stitch herself.
On the oil rag.
On the oil rag. So it's tough because to clean the oil off, they lost some of the color in the old, old threads. And so it was kind of a catch-22 of what to do, whether to clean it or not. But it was not in my family, and so I'm a lawyer, and everybody wanted that thing. They wanted it back in the McFarland side, and my aunt would have none of it.
And this was your aunt on your mother's side.
My aunt and my mom would say, Carlene, it's not even your family. What do you care? But she loved antiques, and she was so proud of this, and she would never let it go. And one day she got Parkinson's and she approached me as an attorney and said, if you will keep my kids from fighting, I'll give you that sampler. And that's how I got it.
And you obtained it.
I was more than happy. And I'm now the envy of the McFarlane clan.
Yeah, but you're taking care of it and making sure that everybody gets the benefit of the information that's on there.
I've been publishing it and posting it on all the boards I can in hopes that we can find where Peter went, because we know Peter, but I'm assuming he lived a life somewhere.
You have no records of him at all from either civil registries or church records or anything, do you?
Nothing so far.
Just this, a letter and this oil rag that indicates he actually existed.
Yeah, it's very exciting. When I publish it, too, all the family, people that aren't even interested in genealogy, I've had people repost it as their Facebook profile.
Really?
In the McFarlane family now. And everybody's now looking and trying to find this Peter Sinclair. It's like the quest.
The quest.
Of the family right now.
Well, but think of it. I mean, the idea that it winds up on your mother's side of the family and it's from your father's side. I mean, completely serendipitous here.
Yeah.
And then is used as an oil rag and then cleaned up and then treasured.
Especially because John Menzies McFarlane moved to St. George. So my dad's family and my mom's family are actually from a town about 45 minutes south of this house. And it's just so crazy that my aunt ends up moving back to Cedar City and happens to buy the very house that her sister's husband's family, you know, was tied to.
Even though they're small towns, still, there's a lot of houses out there.
There's still a lot of houses there.
And the idea of it is just absolutely insane. Well, and it reminds me very much of, you know, what would you call it, a codex from, like, the Revolutionary War?
Yes, we are. We are trying to sleuth this out.
Right. And are there any other initials on there that complicate things?
There's amongst the siblings, there is also an IS.
Okay.
And that is a new name that is not recorded anywhere. Annabelle Sinclair remarried a man by the name of Haight, Isaac B. Haight. And some people believe that it might be a child from the additional marriage, and that because they were all living in the same house, she may have included it. So that's an additional mystery to follow up on, but there may be another child that nobody knows about.
Right, that maybe died young.
Right.
And so have you gone to some of the cemeteries from around where they live to look for that IS?
That Cedar City, Utah is my next stop. Go see what's going on down there.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for sharing the story. It's absolutely astonishing. What you've been able to find, and what a weird twist.
I appreciate it, and if there are any McFarlanes across the nation that happen to know about a Peter Sinclair that is related to that family line, please let me know.
Yeah, I think they should. Absolutely, and you'll share what you've got back. It's great stuff.
Yeah.
And having seen it online, it is absolutely an amazing piece, and we've got it posted on extremejeans.com so people can check it out. It's really fun stuff. Thanks so much, Kelly.
You bet. Thank you.
Does it get any stranger than that? Wow. And coming up next, you've got questions, and Tom Perry, our Preservation Authority, has answers in 3 minutes on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. Hey, welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio, ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here with Tom Perry, our Preservation Authority from TMCPlace.com. How you doing, Tom?
Super duper.
And glad to have some questions in from our listeners. This one from Sheila in the 480. Wherever that area code is, don't know. Sheila writes, I have a bunch of slides of my husband's from over 20 years ago that I'd like to have put on DVD. I listen to Extreme Genes each week and love hearing all you can do to preserve memories. It's gotten me fired up to do just this. Problem, I live in Arizona. Well, there you go. Any suggestions on how I can safely get my slides to you? Thanks for your input, Sheila.
Good question, Sheila. And if you bring them into any of our outlets or ship them into us, remember we have the option. If you want, we can send you a GPS tracking chip that you can put in your box, and you can literally watch the UPS truck go down the street. You can tell if he's pulled over to Denny's for lunch or other things.
Well, that's a good safe feeling then, to know your stuff, your treasures are absolutely safe.
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing technology. Literally, you can go online and see it going down I-80, I-15, I-34, you know, US-1, wherever you happen to be. You can tell if he took a break at Denny's, and you can tell within 3 feet of where it is in the truck.
Oh, I love that.
It's amazing. It's just incredible technology.
And so people ship you stuff from everywhere to everywhere, wherever
exactly.
You may be.
Right. And some people don't have a problem with that. You know, they're pretty comfortable with FedEx and UPS. However, if you want that little bit of added security, you can go to shop.tmcplace.com. And when you fill out your order form, tell us that you want us to send you the chip. And then what we'll do is we'll ship you the box, a packing material, everything you need, and the chip. So you put it in there. print out your UPS label on your home printer. UPS stops by, picks it up, and literally you can go right online 24/7 and watch it going across the country or across the state or wherever. It's amazing technology.
Now, I know Sheila's sitting there thinking right now, oh my gosh, how much does the chip cost, Tom?
About $25. It's okay. Pretty cheap. As part of your whole program, it's very inexpensive to do it. Now, one thing, what we do, which a lot of other people don't do, is we actually shoot your slides at 16.2 megapixels, which is huge. Now, some people are going to say, well, what's a megapixel? Well, let me give you a kind of a correlation that can help you understand. You know how small a slide is?
Right.
It's 35 millimeters. It's little teeny.
It's
about
really tiny, sure.
Very
in fact,
tiny.
A lot of people have thrown them out because they think there's nothing they can do with them.
Exactly. And don't do that.
No.
Don't do that. So if you look at this little teeny 35-millimeter slide, when we scan it, we're basically scanning it as if it was 16.4 inches by 11 by 4 inches. So I'm a size of a newspaper.
Right.
So it's the same thing as if we're scanning something like that at like 300 dpi. With 300 dpi is good for, you know, 3 by 5 photos. Well, we're scanning it as if it was 16 by 11. And so you can basically make billboards out of it. It's absolutely incredible.
Wow. Could you?
Yeah, you could.
Wouldn't that be fun for a family reunion to take a little slide and have this monstrous picture up there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can do something like that. It's just incredible, the DPI that you can do. But don't ever throw slides away. We have people that have gone to amusement parks. They have those little viewers that you look in. It has this little teeny 110 image. And think, oh, this is garbage. I can't use it. No, not necessarily. You can send them in to us, and we can mount them for you and then scan them. Or a lot of times online, you can buy little 35-millimeter slide adapters for 110 film. And then just make them yourself, send them in to us, and we can scan them at the same 16.2 megapixels. Absolutely no sweat at all.
All right. Great question. And, of course, anytime you have a question, you can send it to asktom@tmcplace.com. Tom, you have kind of hinted here that we've got some big things happening with some bigger companies. You mentioned Kodak. What's going on with them?
Okay, well, let me go to Sony first. You know, we talked about Sony coming out with a bigger Blu-ray disc and different things going on like that. We've talked about over in Europe, they're coming out with a quartz disc that will be 364 terabytes.
Right.
Okay, you know the little audio cassettes?
Yes.
How would you imagine getting 3,700 Blu-rays worth of storage on a single audio cassette?
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm
wow.
totally serious.
I didn't even know they made audio cassettes anymore.
Well, yeah, they do. And see, that's another thing, a little bit off, but ties into this. People say, oh, they don't make VHS tapes anymore. Yes, they do. In a lot of audio recording studios, they use VHS tapes. They don't use them for video. They use them for digital audio, but it's the same tape. And this is the same thing. Sony announced at the International Magnetics Conference that was just over in Dresden that they have this new way. This will be over everybody's head, but I love talking big. Use a vacuum forming technique called sputter to deposit a creative layer of magnetic crystals by shooting argon ions at the polymer film substrate.
You aren't just over my head. You're over my house. You're over my airliner. I mean, really?
This is crazy. You could fit a million of these on a pinhead. And by doing this on what we would call an audio cassette, they can get so much data. Like when we talked a few weeks ago about the difference between a CD, a DVD, and a Blu-ray, they're all the same size disc.
Yeah, they're like a box, you were saying.
Exactly. It's just you can get smaller and smaller and smaller based on light waves, where they've got a way that they can make this magnetic particles 7.7 nanometers, which is so teeny, they can basically get 185 terabytes of data on an audio cassette, which in more perspective is 148 gigabytes per square inch.
Wow. In other words, you can store everything you could ever do in your lifetime on one of these.
Oh, yeah. Probably every piece of genealogy you ever created could go on one cassette.
Okay.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible stuff.
Next.
Okay, next, let's go on to what Kodak's doing. This is kind of funny, and people might say, well, what's this have to do with family preservation? You know how sometimes you have an old uncle that maybe stinks, and you don't want to be around him at your conferences?
Oh, come on.
Kodak, who is the largest user of silver,
right,
has figured out a way to take this silver and through some special method impregnate it into clothing, and you can wear the same shirt for a week and there'll never be smells.
Really?
It's absolutely incredible. They're already making scrubs out of it and different kinds of things. So somehow these microbes that cause you to smell, it eliminates them.
Well, Kodak's gone in a whole new direction.
It has. It's just absolutely amazing some of the things they're doing.
Okay, and what else?
Okay, some other things. This comes from our friends at Easy Photo Scan. they're talking about some of these new things that are going on with Dropbox. As I've talked on here before, Dropbox is a great program. I use Dropbox.
Sure.
It's a good cloud
Lots
form.
Of people do, yep.
They just bought HackPad, and they just bought Looms. Redmill, that's part of the group also, they do e-reader type stuff. And so basically, they're gone now. These all three of these were startup companies, and I believe it was Redmill was bought for $8 billion. It's like, you know, are you kidding me? These are little teeny startup companies. And so Loom service basically closed on May 6th, so people can take the opportunity right now. They need to get on there, transferred over to Dropbox, and Dropbox will give them their full credit and everything. They'll be able to still keep everything they have. But the neat thing about this is now all these features are going to be available on Dropbox, and all these engineers that are probably 12 to 14 years old that are like brilliant are all coming to Dropbox now. So besides all this storage stuff, the engineers now at Dropbox are second to none. They're going to be doing stuff like Apple, just absolutely incredible stuff. So if you don't have a Dropbox account, sign up for at least a free one just to see all the new things that are going to be coming down the pipe.
So Dropbox as a cloud is now kind of becoming a best of all of these companies.
Exactly. It's taken all these, you know, these book publishing companies, all these things, and bringing them all into Dropbox. It'll be an absolutely incredible future.
Unbelievable. Thanks so much, Tom. And once again, if you have a question for him, you can ask Tom at tmcplace.com. We'll see you again next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.
This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org.